Quick update. I'm launching a new course for 2025. It's Foundations of Application Security. It's a two-day bootcamp covering everything you need to become a well-rounded AppSec practitioner. There's both public and private courses available, and the best part about it all is taught by me. So if you're interested, just send me an email, call@galahcyber.com.au, or say hi on LinkedIn if you can have a chat about it. Hi, I'm Cole Cornford, and this is Secured, the podcast that dives deep into the world of application security. Today, I'm joined by Elizabeth Stevens, CEO at DBS Cyber. Elizabeth is a former pilot in the US Marine Corps before moving into cybersecurity at Microsoft. She's spent 7 years there and then started at DBS Cyber with a goal to help keep children safe online from the threats we face every day. We speak about her career in military service, how that's influenced her approaches to cybersecurity, about her recent book launch, and how she's making the transition from practitioner to director. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
And I'm here with Elizabeth Stevens. How are you going today? Or should I say tonight?
Yeah, it's going great. Thank you for having me. How are you today?
It's good. I'm missing my family overseas. It's kind of odd being a bit of a bachelor. I'm going around either putting a lot of effort into work or I'm doing absolutely no work and putting a lot of effort into video games.
Just never a bad thing. Never a bad thing.
But anyway, less about me, more about you. So Liz, everyone wants to hear a bit about your background and why I brought you on the Secured. So maybe you could tell us a bit about where you came from and what you're up to now.
So my name is Elizabeth Stevens, former Marine Corps, United States Marine Corps pilot and aviator. Did a bunch of stuff growing up as a young woman in the South who knew nothing about the military and nothing about technology. Very quickly, because I had an I'll try that attitude, found myself not just joining the military, but going to the United States Naval Academy, not just leaving the Naval Academy to become a sailor, but in fact, leaving the Naval Academy to become a Marine Corps pilot. Yes, they have those cool. Little did I know. Spent some time in the military doing some stuff that I truly loved and fell in love with, like flying airplanes, operations, systems. Deployed a couple of times, learned about being a leader and a teammate, a follower and a servant. Retired fairly quickly out of there after about 20 years. I say fairly quickly, but you know.
Fairly quickly, 20 years. Yep.
You know, it's what we do. And was invited to come play matchmaker for a team of, not my words, his tree-hugging hippies that were an IT department that I think of still fondly. At a utility, an unregulated utility out in San Diego. I spent about a year there learning everything there was to learn about routers, switches, fell in love with infrastructure, and then headed over to Microsoft to do something similar, or what I thought was similar. Figured out probably about 2 years in at Microsoft during the great Azure outage that perspective and people are absolutely essential to operations at that scale, at that global scale. Whereas the person that was sitting beside me was frustrated and tired, rightly so, after being at work for about 8 hours, or actually 48 hours at that point, trying to recover from the outage. He said, you know, that he was complaining that it was inappropriate that we should be working this hard to get kids back on their Xbox. And it was at that moment I realized that unless people like you or me were in these seats and in these places, no one would actually understand the impact that the technology has on us. So from my perspective that night, my customer was the women and children of Texas. That organization is an organization that provides food and funding. Specifically, our part was the ACH portion of that server string. And so the outage to some may have been about Xbox and playing video games, but to others was about some child not being able to feed their kid, because that's what critical infrastructure is. And at that moment, I decided that if there was a technology that we were dependent upon, if there was critical infrastructure that we needed to know about, that somebody, more than likely me at the time, was going to have to be in the room to make sure that people understood what we were doing and why. So that's how I started. That's how I went from aviator through a bunch of different things in the Marine Corps to becoming a principal software engineer, cyber director of cyber risk for for the global data centers at Microsoft, and now founder and CTO of my own business, DBS Cyber, which is about protecting families.
Oh, that's really good. I like that you have a reason to being a raison d'etre. And I know that I meet a lot of people in cybersecurity who say, hey, I just want to do cool technical work. I want to hack things. And it's completely like disconnected away from the reason of why we make decisions that we do on a day-to-day basis. Like, I still think obviously you need technical chops, but if you can't put it into perspective about what you're doing and how it impacts individuals who consume those technology systems, then what are you doing? And like, I'm not surprised that big technology companies making people work like tremendously long periods of time, like 48-hour shifts with probably a sleep at the office and a pizza as a reward. It seems to be, especially back in the day, that was just how it was. You just had to do that. Nowadays, I completely rebel and hate that entire concept. I understand that you need to be able to respond to large system outages, but I also think that the human element and human cost, like, you have to have better processes in place. You need to have handover. You need to have like good reliability engineering. You can't just, you know, have the one guy who understands the back end system working his ass off, probably to exhaustion. Like, that's, but you know, I don't know how long ago that was. Hopefully that wasn't too modern.
Right now we're talking about it too, right? Like, the whole point is when you're at 8 hours of uninterrupted operation, right? Not uninterrupted rest, right? That's what we talk about in the aircraft. You've worked for 8 hours, your skills are less, your brain is less, everything is less. And so even if you are the best at what you're doing, do you really want to have the people counting on you that count on you on a global scale, counting on you might as well you being actually drunk because you don't have enough sleep? Some of the problems, I think, of the past, the way things have changed because of COVID for the better, and the way that we do business now for the better with the hybrid environment, is that recognizing that the investment needs to be in the people in order to enable like all of the processes. If you run surge on all your people all the time, it's not surge, it's called exhaustion, and you end up losing them. So from my perspective, the biggest part of like our us figuring this out, and the best part of the new technology, which is kind of why we're here, is, you know, this level of productivity, this level of like innovation that's happening right now, every single one of us should be involved in that. Not just because, you know, you're smart or you're fast or you're good at this or you know anything about tech, but because people like me are going to be out here looking at you to go, what's the next use case you want us to solve? And without you, the user, and the people in that investment, we're not really going to go anywhere. And the bad guys and girls are going to win, whether it's AI or theft or a DDoS attack.
Yeah. So going back to that, the idea of democratization, I know that's something that you care quite deeply about, is how do we use technology to better help everyday people, especially like women and children who may not otherwise participate or even consider that they can leverage it to better their lives. I know there's a common quote on the internet that I want AI to stop doing like painting and writing so that I can force myself to do laundry and cooking. I want to say that, how do we flip it so that it's more valuable for people?
I think that's the exact right question, right? Like, instead of, so first the question becomes like, who's driving the use cases, right? AI, like cyber, like any of the tech that we've had in the past, is driven by revenue and total addressable market. And who has the majority of the technology right now? Larger companies that are pointed at commercial use cases. But some of the other companies and some of this technology is so accessible that people like you, people like me can easily go, okay, this is how I'm using it. Like, for my purposes, if there is a cyber innovation, then I want to utilize that cyber innovation, not just for my company or my customers, but for myself, right? Every single one of us has a right to be able to protect ourselves. And right now in Australia, it's a little different than it is in the US. In Australia, all of your information, all of your data is already out there and being handled by your government. For us in the United States, that wasn't exactly something that is expected or even enjoyed. right? And so with the advancements in the spaces that we're talking about, whether it's AI, data, even the internet, or smart traffic, smart schooling, productivity, water, or even like in the medical field, because right now we're having people recognize that they don't go into the doctor to update their insulin shots, right? So with all of this stuff, no one's going because we're the little people, those investments, the people that I said we need to invest in again, no one's going, hey, how does this make my life easier? And how much does it cost? And that's what we would do, right? So I have a special needs kiddo. Every year we have to do an individualized education plan. Each school is different. Every teacher is different. Every year we do something that is new and improved. But the idea is that when this is the contract between me, the parent, her, the child, and then the child's teacher through the school district that says, this is what we're working on. And so instead of me having to go through all of the IEPs and go find other people and do these things that are so very like taxing, as well as all the other jobs, I took the concept of the IEP and some technology and established a pattern that I liked with one of our things, our pieces of technology, so that now whenever I'm looking at what we're doing for the updates or the year, I can go, this is what she should be working on. This is where what I should be looking at. This is where I need to be going with it, as opposed to having to do that all at once and count on the teachers to give me the information. Now, the reason I say that this is about all of us is because as soon as I figured out how to do it for myself, the next step was trying to get it somewhere where people could use it publicly. And that's just one, right? Like that it's a big deal, but you don't want to put your information out there. And it's expensive to use some of these tools to do that for you. So we're figuring out ways to do it so that it's not expensive and it's safe. And I think that's where that those two circles connect, the innovation and the cybersecurity, cyber compliance, et cetera. That's what's allowing people to make strides in figuring out like how to use the AI to figure out what's for dinner or to plan around their lives. So we're talking consumer productivity from a lifestyle perspective. That's where I want it to be. That's where we're going.
I wonder what parts of my life would be easier. I know this is so funny, but like a few weeks ago, there was an article on the ABC, which is the Australian Broadcast Network. And it was about Dbot vacuum cleaners by Ecovax being like taking photos and being horrendously insecure. And literally a week beforehand, I was on a podcast with Adam Haskard, and we were just talking about how secure robotics is going to be the future, and we need to care about our weapons mm-hmm. of vacuuming destruction. And then there we go. it's blowing up. Yes. So, yeah. What I liked about that is, I don't know, you said you mentioned that you have a child who has special needs. Like maybe not even a week ago, I had knee surgery not too long back, and I still got up out of, like, you know, long crutches and went to go see this place in Newcastle called First Chance, who they help families teach children with autism to catch up on workload outside of hours. Mm-hmm. And what all I went there for was, as part of their whole day planning session, is a conversation about how do we leverage artificial intelligence and also be considerate of the safety and privacy mm-hmm. implications of using it. And everyone was super excited about, hey, I can use it to, you know, automatically take case notes for me based on what's happening in my lesson, because a third of my job is to fill in information about what do we do during the day. Or I want to produce books and reading material that's customized or uses simpler language or uses a foreign language or has artwork so I can, you know, make it easier.
Social stories, visual schedules. Right. This is what I'm talking about right now. Like there's a whole, I wish I could unplug the camera and take it with me downstairs to show you the basement at this point. Right? A part of this is like, I wish people, like, I get it. You know, you know me well, right? I don't like people being excited about innovation and not actually understanding the hazards of the innovation. But I would like people to recognize, like, it's our time right now. No one knows all this stuff because it hasn't been created yet. If you're a single mom or a mom of 17 or a dad who's trying to figure out like how to keep the kids from rioting every single one of us has the ability to come up with something specific that these tools, not just the cyber tools, but also the AI tools can help us with. It's about not doing the thing that everyone's telling you to do. It's about doing the thing that you need done. So I say invest in the people and the process first, for whether you're a consumer, whether you're a nonprofit, whether you're a commercial. You got to invest in your people, because the people are going to plan out your process. You're going to watch them do the process. So then you know your process is solid. Okay, there is definitely a process, a morning routine, a noon routine, an afternoon routine for just about everything we do, whether you've mapped it or not. And these tools can help you with that. And then at the same time, as like I'm sitting here in the safety of America talking to you out there in Australia where all your data.
Out there, come on.
I like down under. I'm up here in the South. Yay, tornadoes, hurricanes, many other things that we won't talk about. But like some of this is about me going, hey, do you know that there's a piece of gear, probably about a $200 piece of gear. You know, I'm not advertising anybody. This one's on the way to my house too, that you buy. It's a firewall for your house. It's extremely inexpensive. You can plug it in downstream or upstream of your chosen service, and then you get to control everything that comes in and out of your house. This is not expensive. I mean, it's not a cheap piece of gear, but it's also not that expensive. It costs about, for some people, if you're in the United States, costs about a week's worth. Like it's two weeks of groceries for a single person, right? Like a third of a week if you have kids. But you know, you plug this in and now you know for sure the signals that are coming in and out of your house. Not only that, you're becoming more up-leveled on how this stuff works and what the sounds are. Then guess what? Next thing you can do is, instead of being afraid of where you're putting your information on your television or your stove or your computer, now you know that there are no signals coming in and out because you're in full control of that. Now that's scary too, because then you're going, okay, because my Alexa doesn't work. And some of my friends out there, yours and mine both, right, out there going, did she just say smoke check your home internet? Yes, yes, I said it. Smoke check your home internet, right? That's security. Guess what? Why? Because now you're in complete control of what information goes in and outside of your house. Now, coming down on the other side of that, right, then your kids got to come to you and go, Mom, my Roblox isn't working. But guess what? Now you get to have that conversation with them. So one piece of gear means everything inside your house is safe except for insider threat. That one piece of gear isn't even high speed, low drag. It's just a good piece of gear, right? Now that you protect your house, right? People process, you got the house protected. Now, what are some of the things that you're doing? Oh, I'm getting my kids ready to go to school, or I'm cooking, trying to figure out what to make meals for the week, right? Everybody's got a meal planner, right? But does everybody have a meal planner that you can set up to say, hey, I've got these three kids in the house. This is their dietary requirements. They hate this, 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 and this. No, you don't. But guess what? You could, because now that you have a safe environment where you can tinker around with any number of free AI that are out there, you can set up your own AI to help you figure out what to order, when to order, what to fix, how long it's going to take. And then with a little bit of education, a little bit of tutoring, a little bit of YouTube, do it yourself. You can even have it look at your calendar and tell you what you should fix on what days because of the amount of time it takes. But that's a use case, right? For me, you get to go, okay, we can use the AI to do X, Y, and Z. What if, like the example you gave was like, okay, I can get my notes done, I can do that. What if for each one of the kiddos, you set up an AI optical, right, that could walk in the room, you got the camera, you walk in the room, you scan the room, and the room goes, this is too much yellow, too much blue, too much speckles for said named kiddo AI that I was programmed for. We can't be in this room. It's going to put us at this level of agitation. How nice would that be?
Yeah, okay.
That is literally the use case. Now, could you do that for all kids? Nope, can't make a product that said this is an autism spectrum sensory analysis.
Yep, it'd be hard to have a large enough market to be able to win from that.
Would it?
I want to unpack two things that I had there. So UX. So one of the things you suggested is let's put like a firewall or something that analyzes traffic in for a home. And I've got a few friends who've done this and their experience, well, in my household, it's extremely challenging to do because my wife uses a lot of Chinese stuff And it's basically impossible for me to really take a step back and say, cool, what is that? What is that? What is that? Even if I use like, you know, AI to try to translate it, it's just not worth it without upsetting her. And so I'm taking the person first and saying, nah, I can't do that.
Love it. Love it.
And even a few of my other friends, like when she's gone and visited, they've like, you know, block listed everything that's coming from a .cn or from a WeChat or from a Pinduoduo or so on. And they're like, what's all this Chinese traffic coming from? Like, it's all blocked. And my wife's sitting there angry, being like, why can't I use my phone at your friend's house? So I know that we have to be considerate of the needs of people. And it's not easy for us to, you know, make blanket statements. And I also know that I can't really say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm just being secure, like, because she'll get angry. But and also using AI to create recipes, that could be quite fraught, because I've seen some hilarious things. I remember looking up a recipe for whiskey on the rocks, and it's literally pouring Talisker directly onto some stones. And I think that is not a good use of Talisker, personally, but...
Somebody might like it. No, I think part of it too is like when we say this, it's not about, because you know the infrastructure person to me is going, and then you give her own environment, and then nothing comes from that environment to the other environment.
Yeah, but then you're in a situation where you have to maintain multiple environments, then, right? And like, I guess as a CE, there's a lot that I could be doing, and choosing to spend time maintaining a home network just so I can have my wife on a separate VLAN. It's hard.
again, we're talking about the difference. Remember, American versus Australia.
Yeah.
We're talking about the difference between like in... It was a big deal when one of the CEOs said, well, what difference does it make if they know who you're calling and how often, right? Here, we're all like, are you, excuse me, blink, 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 right? In other places, maybe not, because they have it all. Like my personal perspective is this, if you exist in that way, right, you're, the question is whether or not the things that she's doing look like bad traffic because they look like bad traffic, or if they look like bad traffic because somebody has a biased register.
Yeah, and I don't want to have that fight.
Because you know what I'm saying. The question is, she's like, hey, because if it was anywhere else, you'd be like, what's this .com address? Oh, that's from my Instagram. Okay. But then if it's Conjure or something else, everybody's like, why? What? But to give it a, yeah, we definitely should block that. How do you know? You should just ask the question.
Look at these Cyrillic characters going to a Russian website. Yeah. There was a student at the local university who was complaining that she couldn't go and look at just like her online grocery shopping online to buy groceries for her dad in Russia. And then because the university was just like blocking basically everything that had Cyrillic characters effectively and said it's a high risk domain. And she's just like, I don't know, I'm an international student here. How can I buy my dad groceries? It's called.
Yeah.
Like, and that, and just the university is just like, Russia is bad. So no. And she's just like, I don't understand. Like what I'm Russian student in Australia. Like, am I bad?
Look, this is what I'm saying, right? You're like, so exactly. Why aren't we checking? Cause you know, in some places, like I love that about it too, though. I mean, part of like, I've told you nothing about my pay. Part of like my passion, right, is making sure that this is democratized, right? Some of the work that we're doing right now is Project Management Institute, that everybody wants to do an AI strategy. I honestly love using our skill set to innovate and create amazing things, Cole. But truly the thing that we do that other people don't do is think about it from the whole person perspective, right? My thought process and my prediction at this point, because we're about proactive cyber defense and proactive defense period. But like my thought process is this, like over the last 70 years since, you know, Big Blue, right? Things have happened exponentially faster, regardless of whether you go technology versus culture or culture versus technology. It's been an exponential growth curve and it's going to continue to be that. The last, like I would say where we are with AI from where we were then, like, is the difference between where I was flying the Osprey from where I started flying the CH-46, right? Like fly-by-wire and analog, completely different. Transmission versus algorithms, completely different that fast, and it's going to continue to get faster. I don't think we're talking Terminator. We're not talking the T whichever thousand coming at us to stop us. We're talking about you and me and our two GPJs or JPTs, or I don't know, maybe they're the DBS 2000s running around with, you know, Liz and Cole and you name said name other person. We're all working together because of the way we are. The future for us is not about man versus machine. It's about men and machine, woman and machine versus woman and man and machine. And so from my perspective, there's a lot of stuff out there that people don't want to do. Like the example of like, okay, I don't want to have to like get into the discussion about shutting down all the sites because of my significant other, yep. Right? Like at the same time, I'm going, I hate the fact that my kids are like captives of Roblox, right? Like they are, this is one of the best marketing. I need to mimic whatever Roblox is doing. It's working, right? Like I've counter-terrorized my kids to the utmost degree. They know how social engineering works, but Roblox has them. And that to me says like, hey, man, it's going to be a lot of trouble for me to figure out what they're doing, why, and show them how it's a negative. But the reason that you and I have to figure that out is because it's the same reason that I had to be in that space and learn more about cybersecurity, because our use cases aren't going to be witnessed. They're not going to be advocated. They're not even going to be built in that scenario. It's easy. You said it. It's easy for entire governments to go, nope, it's the wrong alphabet. Looks weird. Shut it down. What if that's the way that, like, what if the only way to, like, manage insulin in rural areas in the U.S. is going through a VPN that requires this code? We're going to shut that down? Yeah, we would, right? Like, I say smoke check for the people that aren't infrastructure people. Smoke check-in is when we shut everything off and see who starts, like, screaming and yelling.
That's it. Seeing if there's some fire, if there's some smoke in, and learn out where everything's burning. So
exactly. You're like, where the fire is. But, like, in this case, I think from a American angry perspective, not American angry, but, like, you know, who we are, the Marine in me, like, I see it as already being on fire. And so, like, I feel like that's what we got to do. Make it easier. Yeah, that's my job. Make it easier for the little guy.
So taking a step actually to go back to that. So you spent 20 years in the military, and I know that you've come out and you said that people and processes and perspectives are the most important thing, and that technology like should be supporting those other aspects.
Yeah.
What other types of leadership did you learn in the military that you bring into your new role as a CTO at a cybersecurity company?
So, I mean, straight up from the top down, it's going to be servant leadership, right? One of the things that you get from the Marine Corps, and I think from some of the military services that I've met in the globe, honestly, is this need to make sure that the actions that you're taking and the outcomes benefit more than just yourself, whether it's altruistic, whether it's as a part of a company, or whether it's because, you know, you believe in, you know, like some of us do, that like helping others is of value. So the servant leadership came out of the military and potentially some of the upbringing. The thing that I learned that was unique from my perspective, specifically in the military and in aviation, was this tendency to ensure, from a Marine Corps perspective, had to be, but this tendency to ensure that you understand the cost of life and labor on the back end of that. And so even though, you know, at some point we're responsible, each squadron's 12 airplanes, you knew every single person that was required to run those 12 airplanes, right? It wasn't about the production at the end. It was about maintaining the resource that is the people, investing in the resources of the people. Earlier, I said, you know, it's 8 hours of uninterrupted rest. That comes from aviation, because your mental faculties, your ability to operate decreases significantly when you start talking about human factors. And for the level of responsibility people like you and I have, especially when we're incident responders or when we're making huge decisions that seem small because it's just a decision in our, from some of the work we've done in the past, just a small decision in our project scope that has global implications. the thing that you have to remember is that it's the person in the seat that's got to be on point. The machines will do what machines do.
For better or worse, right? That's a good thing about computers, right? They'll do exactly what you tell them to. And the bad thing about them is they'll do exactly what you tell them to.
Exactly what you tell them to do, right? But like, that person in the seat is the person that's going to run. And so instead of thinking, I think we talk about a lot, like, how do you run a small business? How do you run a startup? Is it any different, right? On this side of the fence, from Marine Corps perspective, we build it one brick at a time. From Silicon Valley, from the West Coast, and like my corporate history, we build it $1 at a time. Being out here as a founder and CTO, we build it one person at a time. Each, whether that person's my use case, which is my customer, whether that person is the end user, which is my customer's customer, whether that person's my CEO or one of the apprentices, right? The thing that I learned in the Marine Corps is all the tools in the world are amazing. You can do whatever you can have. It's great to feel funded. It's great to feel rewarded, but if you can't get from A to B in $1 million airplane, and then you've got like the $50,000 airplane with a bunch of Marines that have gone back and forth from A to B 16 times while you're trying to get started up, then what good is it? So I take a do more with less perspective from the Marine Corps, but that is, I also take that your people are your most important asset from the Marine Corps. So if you got to spend money somewhere, spend it on your people.
So I know that you've recently been spending a lot of time to write a book. Would you be able to maybe tell us a bit about why did you want to write a book? Because it's a lot of hard work and something I've been playing with the idea of, but then realized that I have an almost two-year-old and that is very hard to write a book with. So what inspired you and what's your book about?
So the book is called... The book is called Building a Resilient Digital Future, a Comprehensive Guide to Cyber Risk Management. So the book is about basically the inception of the idea was this concept that about a year ago, summer 2023, there was this big push for people to go full on into whatever the newest cyber thing was. And then at that point, like we were just at the tip of the newest AI thing. And so people kept asking the question, like, what do we do first? And instead of so many people were like, okay, we do this. And instead of like watching people crash and burn, I go, wait, time out, pause. What do we need? Right? If we're going to do anything, we need to start at home. Know yourself, know your troops, know your job. And so it started out with the Cyber Risk Manifesto, which was a completely different document when I started. But as I wrote that doc, then I was like, well, what else? Because people would ask questions. Cyber Risk Manifesto is a call to action. It's about proactive, being proactive and not reactive. It's about using intelligence-led and intelligence-driven, so data-driven, data-led decisions. And it's about the integration of all of your resources, business, IT, cyber, everybody, and then using that with a couple of things like continuous learning and collaboration to make sure that you kill it for your cyber posture. Right. And that's what the manifesto was about. Over a period of time, the questions, which one to many, many to one, all had a sort of a pattern. And so I went from this is what we all need to get together. We all need to do this. Sign up. Let's all get on board for this call to action. Let's start building it out. Turned into about 30,000 words of, OK, this is the intelligence driven portion. This is what you think about when you talk about risk in a cyber defensive perspective. This is what the threat looks like. And that turned into probably about 250 some odd pages of here's a handbook on how you can approach your own stuff and build out your environment in a way that focuses on your people and your business and the things that you have organic and inherent, native even to your systems to propel you forward exponentially. That's what the book's about.
Yeah, I find that most cybersecurity books focus on either preparing people for certifications and exams or they're like about IT quality. So like how do you know, do basically audits and assessments to improve IT quality. And I don't think we need to. Oh, there we go. Look, big picture of building a digital resilient future.
Yeah. I like shaking it, right? But like the data work. So I'm not into graphics. I had someone do that for me, but I think you hit the nail on the head. No one's really talking about how to do it. Right. And what to do. my focus is, and I think that's part of like the way that you and I, when you and I met, why we hit it off so well, was that in truth, there's a lot of people out there that are selling certifications and, you know, leveraging badges, for lack of a better term, I won't call any out in particular, but not a lot of people actually know how to implement any of the things that they're trying to implement. And for that reason, especially recognizing that the people that are impacted the most in the world, not just here in the United States, but in the world, are people that are disadvantaged and don't have access. For me, it's rural, underserved communities. You know what that looks like for Australia.
Yep. And
that's why I had to write it, because whether you're in like the beginning chapters where you're going, okay, what is risk? What is cyber? What is a cyber risk management or monitoring plan? And what's the difference? Or you're at page like 71 going, oh yeah, I remember her talking about threat types. Do I need to know what SQL injection is? No, but it's right here in case I wanted to know. Oh, and here's all your examples of different things you can do. Like, those are the kind of things that, you know, if we can build a culture, like a community call, if we can build a community that speaks the same language, whether they're at home, at school, on this side getting ready to go to bed, or on your side getting ready to start, that's what we need to do. And that's what the book is about. All you need to do, like I tell people, buy the book. This tells you everything you need to know about doing it yourself. The next book will be probably about Iraq and the Iraqi elections and something to do with like jumping out the back of air helicopters.
Yeah, I know that. I guess I deal with a lot of people who, you know, live on farms and like otherwise have like pretty non-tech roles, right? Like they grow. I live near the Hunter Valley, so I've dealt with a few people who are winemakers. I've dealt with a few folk who just happen to be in abattoirs for slaughtering or agriculture, even just like, you know, standard panel beading or like paint manufacturing and stuff. And they always like say, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, what do I need to do? And ultimately, I usually end up going back and being like, well, like, what's the purpose of your business and how does it make money? And are there any particular aspects that are like really, really important that something doesn't go wrong with? And just teaching them how to do that little bit of critical thinking is enough to give them some reasonable amount of advice. And I never charge these kind of businesses because, like, you know, yeah, it's an abattoir, but also like, I get the majority of my money from large technology firms that have like really, really challenging issues because they just have so much tech in place. But that I don't need to go out to like someone who's just like, you know, killing chickens and, you know, turning them into chicken breasts.
Well, I mean, and that's part of the business, right? Like, because you do the same. People are like, you're giving it away for free. And I'm like, but like, that's the whole point. Like, the thing that the whole point is we can't win unless we give it away for free. But also, from my perspective, like, this is the part where I'm going to be the American. We need militia people. We need everybody to know how to fight the cyber war. So like, I got you, but what if you're the one household in the whole neighborhood that allows for us, allows for the bad guys to infiltrate? No, I mean, yes and no. At the same time, I say that, like, I think this technology is for everyone. Whether it's cyber technology or not, like inside, outside, right? Like, not the show Inside, but like if we talk
about the kid show,
yeah, like the kid show, right? Like, yeah. Talking about Bluey, this one too. We talk about like, what is it that makes us, you know, what is it that brings things into our home, right? Things that are of value. Here, the things that need to be in our homes have to be the things that bring us services that are connected to our well-being, like in our life. So phone, water, whatever, same as there, right? But in the US, like, the things that support that are not protected. And so without the knowledge of what to do, like, how do you know not to stick your card in the machine that has the little sticky on it? How do you know not to scan every QR code? People like you and me start telling people. People like, whether you're small business or not, but people that are in these communities start picking up like a pamphlet or starting a support group, and we start tinkering, and that's where the use cases come from. That's where the protection starts at home.
I think my favorite thing is when you go and do these presentations to the community groups, and then they have the guy, the one guy who's, you know, it's the person that you go to a conference, you do a presentation about entry level cyber or IT or whatever. Yeah. And then there's this one person who's an expert in the audience who says, oh, this is more of a statement than a question. What do you think about blah, 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 blah? And it's like, cool, that's not relevant to this audience, go away. So I love those ones in particular.
Yeah.
Anyway, Elizabeth, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Is there any notes you'd love to share with the audience before we wrap up?
So if you're looking for the book, it is on Amazon. It's Building a Resilient Digital Future. We did not focus group that enough. That title is really long, but Elizabeth, it is available. If you'd like to come out and chat, I'll be in Australia from the 25th to the 30th this year for the AISA conference for PMI, actually Women in Cybersecurity, Melbourne, as well as a PMI hit and potentially up in Sydney, depending on how that works out. So look for me, find us at www.dbscyber.com or look us up on LinkedIn. Feel free to join us on the Watchtower. Help everybody. That's what we do. Help everybody.
Yeah. And that was the 25th of November, right?
November. 25th of November. Yes.
November. Because we don't know when this is going live.
25 November.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Secured. If you got any feedback at all, feel free to hit us up and let us know. If you'd like to learn more about how Galah Cyber can help keep your business secured, go to galahcyber.com.au.
If you're new to the show or a seasoned veteran, I want to hear from you. I'm always looking to do better as a podcast host and as a person. So tell me about what I can do better. Tell me about the types of people you want on my podcast. Tell me about if the format's working for you or styles need to be switched up. Do I need to interview differently? So on and so forth. I appreciate you sticking with me for almost 30 episodes at this stage. And I hope I can keep learning and you can keep learning and being entertained for many more episodes to come. So please shoot me feedback. I want the good, the bad, and the ugly to pod@galahcyber.com.au. And if you don't like email, hit me up on LinkedIn.